Support for WPR comes from Lawrence University in Appleton, home to 1,500 undergraduate students from nearly every state and more than 50 countries. Dedicated to an engaging global education. Lawrence.edu.
Support for WPR comes from Isthmus Partners, an independent asset management firm offering comprehensive financial planning and tailored investment solutions for clients nationwide. More at isthmuspartnersllc.com.
You know, we talk a lot about Wisconsin's wonderful natural areas on the program, and we also cover science pretty often as well. Right now, we're going to kind of do both, combine them. It's the opening day of the Wisconsin Science Festival. Big deal, I'm telling you. Over the next 4 days, there's going to be some wonderful demonstrations. There's talks. There's events happening all over the state. And right now, we're going to hear from one of the presenters. He'll tell us about the science behind restoring and managing our native ecosystems. Rich Henderson's a natural resources research scientist. He works with the Department of Natural Resources, and he has lots of experience. I think over 30 years of experience in natural area inventory, in assessment, managing prairies, sedge meadows, oak savannas, and woodland ecosystems. He's also an active volunteer with the Prairie Enthusiasts and will be giving a Wisconsin Science Festival presentation at their Mounds View grassland site of the Prairie Enthusiasts on Saturday, as a matter of fact. Rich Henderson, welcome.
Thanks, Larry.
Really great to have you with us today. And just a note to our listeners, you may have questions about our native plant and animal communities. And are you concerned about them? Wonder what we can do to help? I'm sure Rich will have some great ideas and suggestions about that as we move along today. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org. Or you can post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. And we'd certainly love to hear from you. You've been involved in, restoring and managing these habitats for many a year. What changes have you seen over these last three, four decades, maybe both positively and negatively? Give you both options there.
Yeah, there have been both. We've continued to lose our what's left, what we call remnants of the original prairies and savannas. There's less than 1% out there remaining of the original. We're still gradually using those pieces. The upside is that we have protected a fair number of those remnants, and we've been doing a lot of restoration, restoring more acreage to increase the amount of habitats available for the species that need those ecosystems.
Yeah, so there's some hope there, at least for what we've got left.
Yeah, in fact, we're starting to think about some large-scale restorations, and the DNR and cooperators are working in southwest Wisconsin on several projects with landscape-scale preservation, management, and restoration.
Just to give people an idea, how many, you know, like when you talk large scale, how many acres might that involve?
Well, the goal is to have some scattered pieces that are big enough for grassland bird conservation and then also restore prairie with them. So we're talking pieces that run from 500 up to maybe 2,000 or 3,000 acres.
Ooh, what a sight that would be, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And the benefits of that, not only from just a human perspective of looking at it and viewing it, are great, are they not?
Yeah, these remnants are great. Even our small ones of a few acres hold a lot of rare plants, a lot of really rare restricted insects still surviving. But there are animals like the grassland birds that have been in decline. They don't necessarily need prairie, but they need large grassland areas, and some small mammals and others that need more habitat. And it would really be nice to have a place where you can have that all together in one system again, where you have both all the plants, the animals, insects, the birds, and areas that are large enough for these rare plants and insects to move around on the landscape.
And actually live.
Live. And if we have, you know, climate change coming, not knowing what's coming, to have environmental gradients from wet to dry, north slopes, south slopes. So these organisms have ability to move then as the climate changes.
You're doing a presentation as part of this Wisconsin Science Festival, which is pretty fun deal, isn't it, this festival?
Yeah, it is. It's a great opportunity for people to go meet researchers, scientists, see what they're doing, learn how they do it, what they're finding. We're really excited for the prairie enthusiasts is really excited to be hosting a workshop. It's called the Wisconsin Science Festival Workshop, and it's a half-day event with actually six different presentations. I'm giving a couple, but we'll have researchers from the university and the DNR, other DNR researchers presenting on topics like grassland bird research, badger research out in the area, prairie-restricted insects, a response to fire, birds that use the thickets out in the grassland landscape, rare plant monitoring, and measuring and restoring a drained peat wetland, how to bring that back and monitor it. And it's not only professional scientists, but a lot of citizen science, science going on. And DNR actually has a program, citizen monitoring program, that people can get involved with. And we've used those out in the Southwest grassland quite a bit to do some of this monitoring research.
Yeah, and those folks do a nice, many of them do a very, very nice and thorough job.
Yeah, with a little bit of direction and training, people can help develop these databases over many, many years. That would be very costly if we had to pay for all of it to get done. It just wouldn't get done.
Yeah. So the science, what kind of science is vital for preserving the prairies then?
Well, I put it in a general category of using information for adaptive management, where we're going out and finding just what these species really need in terms of habitat, in terms of how much fire you use, where you use fire, how big an area, what type of grass, whether or not you take trees out of fence lines, how much trees and shrubs are okay or how much is not okay, to keep gathering information, monitoring these plants and animals. And as we learn and see how they respond over time, then going back and tweaking and modifying our management strategies. So it's an iterative, ongoing, continuous process.
Very cool. Jackie in Green Bay has a question or comment. Let's go there. Jackie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Need to ask you a question. We are pretty much rookies at this, but we always wanted to buy a hunk of land, and we bought 5 acres, which was a cornfield, which is now 5 acres of weeds. We're building a house on part of it, but we would like to turn a lot of it into prairie or a meadow. We need to know what's the first step in getting rid of these in an eco-friendly way, and what resources do we have in the Green Bay area as to where do we start?
Yeah, where do you get going? Yeah, you're kind of breaking up, Jackie, unfortunately, but.
Yeah, Jackie, you're up in the part of the state that's kind of at the north end of where the prairies reached into. So you might be limited on the type of species you'll get up there, but it's certainly doable. Probably the best thing to do is maybe go online and check. There's various sources of information out there. We have UW-Madison Arboretum puts out materials. A lot of the private nurseries that provide seeds and plants of native plants have a lot of their own materials that are very good.
Prairie enthusiasts.
Yeah, well, the Prairie Enthusiasts website has some introductive material as well, but that's not our. I mean, we do education and outreach, and we help people out, but it's not our primary focus of what we do. But there's lots of resources out there. You know what to do, how to get started. There's actually a book called Tallgrass Prairie Restoration. That's a great handbook by Packard and Mutal, I believe, done about 15 years ago. Mm-hmm. It's a great resource to get your hands on, and there's other books as well.
And, of course, there are some wonderful nurseries throughout the state that Neil DeBoll with Prairie Nursery, for example, is a great example, but there are many others, too.
Yeah, we have Applied Ecological Services, Al Broadhead, and several others, and they do produce materials that they give to people on how to get started.
Yeah. So you got a lot of materials out there, Jackie, and just have to get looking at them. But I can tell you one thing: site preparation is very, very key when you're talking.
Yeah, the site preparation is important, but even more important is the follow up in terms of weed control. But the most important thing is getting the seed out. There's so many different ways of doing restoration, but the bottom line is you got to get the seed out. Get the right diversity of seed, get enough seed out, And over time, it'll work its way out. But you have to do quite a bit of follow-up work.
Yeah. The first few years, I would say, the first couple, 3 years are a fair amount of work.
Well, there's at least mowing for weeds the first couple of years. And eventually, you want to have some type of burning rotation to keep it strong. And a lot of these species, they just take time to develop. They're putting all their energy into their roots first few years. A few species may flower the first year or two, but a lot of these, it's 5, 7, 8 years before they flower.
Man, that's a long time. But Jackie, good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate it. We will invite you to call in too. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call with your questions or comments. What are some of the current areas of work that have been identified and prioritized because of some of the scientific research that's been done?
With the grassland birds, actually this whole conservation effort in southwest Wisconsin is based on our best knowledge of what we think the habitat requirements are for some of these grassland birds. They need, some of them need large areas like upland sandpipers and northern harriers. Others can live in smaller patches like the endangered Henslow sparrow, but they tend to be in colonies, and you need a certain amount of grass on the landscape for them to even come into a region. You might have a nice 20-acre grass field that these birds would use if it was sitting in the landscape context of lots of 20 acres in 40s and 50s and 100s.
Yeah.
But if it's 20 acres in a sea of nothing else, no other grassland, you won't get them. So that type of information. And also we've learned that having these trees in the fence lines kind of are edge effect or a disturbance to the grasslands in terms of predators that use these corridors, cowbirds that sit on those trees and then watch the cowbirds parasitize, lay their eggs in the nests of those other birds. And when they have a perch to sit on, they're more effective at finding nests. And if you remove that perch, they're far less effective at finding the grassland bird nests. And if you remove those fence lines, those tree lines or trees in a grassland setting, you generally increase more habitat and generally more productive habitat for the grassland birds.
Very interesting. I hadn't thought about that. Yeah. Probably a lot of people hadn't thought about that.
So that's where that adaptive management, we've learned this information, say, oh, yeah, maybe that line of trees might help some species, but if our goal here is the conservation of these grassland birds, that may be a deficit. And we should consider removing those for that purpose.
Get rid of them. Yeah. Rich Henderson, our guest today, is a natural resources research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, talking with us today about the science of prairie restoration and management. Looking forward to your questions. Give us a call, 1-800-642-1234. We'll be back with Rich right after the news. Well, when we enjoy a great meal or a wonderful musical performance, or maybe we're able to get from one place to another thanks to our vehicle, we often don't think about all the work that went into creating that experience of those things. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along. There's a lot going on behind the curtain that we're not aware of, and I think that's usually part of the science and research that goes into protecting and managing our state's natural areas. A lot goes on behind the scenes that most of us just don't see. Rich Henderson is a natural resources research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He has 36 years of experience in natural area inventory, assessing and managing prairies, sedge meadows, oak savannas, and oak woodland ecosystems. He's also an active volunteer with the Prairie Enthusiasts, and he's going to be giving a Wisconsin Science Festival presentation at the Prairie Enthusiasts Mounds View Grassland site on Saturday. And Rich, thanks again for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
My pleasure.
Where is this Mounds View Grassland site?
It's about five and a half miles south of Blue Mounds, off of, south of 18151, off of County F. It's a large preserve there that the Prairie Enthusiasts have. They have a barn facility, headquarters for management, and on Saturday afternoon, there'll be six different presentations on using science to help guide management of grassland-type ecosystems and prairies.
And, of course, that's free and open to the public.
You bet.
Obviously. And it You have information up on your website, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that's correct. You can also go to the Wisconsin Science Festival site and just a search word, put in prairie, and it'll pop up showing that site. And I just want to point out that this is called a workshop because you'll also have the opportunity then to go into the field with these researchers and see firsthand, like, for example, they'll probably go out and see a badger den, for example.
Mm-hmm.
Not necessarily a badger, but go see a den and look at the habitat and talk with the researchers actually in the field as well.
And what are you going to be talking about? Tell us about that.
I'm actually giving one talk on what we call prairie-restricted insects, insects that only live on prairie plants and aren't found really anywhere else. And some of these are sensitive to fire. And, of course, fire is a critical management tool for the health and maintenance of the prairie. So there's a balancing act going on here. So we have to gather a lot of information to know how much of a site to burn, how often, when, that kind of stuff. So I've gathered data on an insect, and there's an endangered regal fritillary butterfly that we actually have citizen-based monitoring going on at sites to help gather data over many, many years to help us make these decisions.
Very cool. And let's talk about your job for a minute with the DNR. Give us some specifics about the kinds of things you do.
I'm basically a plant ecologist or some wildlife and zoology and entomology background. So I work on a wide variety of things. One of the biggest projects right now is what we call oak ecosystem management, looking at tree harvest and use of fire to try to maintain oak woodlands for oak regeneration, but also the whole plant community associated with these oak trees. Over the past 50, 60 years, our oak woods are being taken over by more shade-tolerant species, heavier shade species that invade the sites. I've done work on purple loosestrife biological control and ecology. I had some federal money to work on prairie insects, just where they are, how restricted they are, how they respond to management. So it's been a variety of things over a long period of time.
Sounds like fun.
Yeah, it is.
It is. Trudy in Harper's Ferry, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I suppose it's been about 7 years now, but my husband and I turned part of our yard over maybe about a quarter of an acre to some tallgrass prairie species, and they've done pretty well. One of the things that I've noticed in the last couple of years is we are getting a few more like, wild blackberry, and of course I have to keep an eye out for, that invasive rose species. The name is skipping my mind, but we've never had a lot of success in burning our prairie. It seems like when we go to burn it in the spring, there just isn't enough, you know, dry material there left. And I was wondering if it might be a better idea to burn in the fall in order to reduce some of these shrubby species that are starting to show up.
Yeah, fire in the fall in prairies actually was a pretty natural, a common occurrence historically. In the upper Midwest, though, spring fires are probably a little more common. As you go south, like the southern Illinois, when you get a longer, warmer, Indian summer conditions, and fall fires are more prevalent. So certainly fall fire is a very viable option. I'm just curious why you don't have enough fuel. Does this site get enough sunlight, or is there some shading?
Oh, no, it's in full sun. I don't have a lot of grass species in there. It's mostly forbs, and I don't know why. It just seems like by the spring, things are kind of, you know, rotted out, and, on the ground, there's just not quite enough mass. We've attempted to burn it numerous times, and then we get a partial burn, but never like a big, conflagration kind of burn.
Yeah.
Well, I think you probably pointed out what you need to do is maybe get a little more grass in there to help carry the fire.
Yeah.
Right.
In the meantime, you could do a fall burn, though.
You can try a fall burn. I just don't know if you'll have to see. It might work better for you, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Yep. Thanks, Judy, for calling. I wanted to mention that we got an email, I believe, from someone in response to Jackie's question earlier about starting a prairie in the Green Bay area. The person says, please suggest she contact the local Green Bay chapter of Wild Ones to see if they can help set up a mentor program. There are several native plant nurseries in the Green Bay and De Pere areas, which could also be of some help. But if you go to Wild Ones Green Bay, .blogspot.com, or just put in Wild Ones Green Bay, it's probably going to pop up. That's a good piece of advice. Wild Ones a great group too.
Yeah, they're a good resource.
Yeah, very good. Mike in Green Bay, hi.
Hi, I have a question about. I believe they're phragmites. They grow along the bay in real thick.
Phragmites, yeah.
And I've noticed I have 35 acres in Denmark, and some of it's lowland, and there's. I've been there for 17 years, and I've noticed that there's phragmites starting to grow up everywhere now. As the DNR, you know, making people aware is that natural to this area? I don't know anything about them. That's what I'm calling. Mm-hmm.
Sure. Yeah. No. Phragmites is just like reed canary grass is native circumboreal, which means both New World and Old World in the northern hemispheres. But there's a European or Asian strain that genetically is different that has been introduced that it seems to be very aggressive. So most of this invasion that's going on is this introduced strain of Phragmites. And it is a real problem in wetlands moving in. Yes, the DNR and other groups, other conservation groups are looking into ways of trying to control this, to find biological control or mechanical, chemical. Unfortunately, I'm not really up to speed on just where things are right now with how that's going and what's the best techniques.
There's a lot of work going on. But actually, I think the DNR website has, you go to the website and look under invasives.
Yes, thanks, Larry, for pointing that out. They have information on a number of invasive species with the, you know, what the situation is, the ecology, and suggestions for control.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Thanks for calling. Appreciate it. We have Chris in Columbus next. Chris, hi. Thank you for calling.
Great show as usual. And I am purchasing a 20-acre piece of property, and touring at the edges of the hay field are all scrub trees. And, of course, I know I got to take those out and put oak in. But what other trees, species can I plant to enhance wildlife? And then there's a section of lowland that's just cattails right now. Can that sustain a prairie environment?
I'll address the trees first. For wildlife, oaks and hickories are probably your best bet in terms of providing mast and food and light shading that allows for a more diverse ground layer with more fruits and nuts and berries and seeds of other species. Depending on the soil and the setting, of course, there's quite a few other tree species as well. But if you're generally interested in wildlife, I think oaks and hickories are really your best bet there. As far as prairies, yeah, the term prairie includes plant communities from very wet to very dry conditions. And you get into the wettest ones, we start calling them sedge meadows. That just means there's more sedges than grasses, but they're very much like prairies. And so low areas of supporting cattails could very well be restored into what we call a wet prairie or possibly a sedge meadow type wet prairie. Yes, mm-hmm. Definitely.
Yep, absolutely. Good luck, Chris. Thanks for calling. Tom in Appleton. Hello.
Hi. I just wanted to make a comment, Rich, that I hear very often, and I think I heard it today, the phrase prairie restoration, mm-hmm. that in many, if not most cases that I hear that, it's impossible because it's in a part of the state where prairies did not exist at the time of European settlement. I'm standing in a prairie as I speak to you. I work with the stormwater utility, and we use prairie plantings, not prairie restorations, because they meet the requirements of having a native plant community while not restricting drainage. These are, after all, urban drainage corridors. I think it's fantastic to see prairie plantings like this. But if you're not south of Fond du Lac or so, you're not doing a prairie restoration, and that's really my main comment.
Hmm. Yeah, if you go to a map of original vegetation Wisconsin through the USGS or Curtis's map, Vegetation of Wisconsin, look at those. You'll see where the prairies and savannas were mostly in the western and southern part of the state. And you get this climate change. It's called the tension zone. Runs from the northwest to the southeast. And north of that, you tended to have a cooler moisture environment and more conducive to trees and kind of resistant to the fires set by Native Americans or lightning. And therefore, you intended not to get too much prairie-type vegetation in that northeast half of the state. But a number of these prairie plants will grow up there if given enough sunlight and given the opportunity. But you're right, some of them will not grow. You're just getting outside their natural range. And, yeah, using these native plants for stormwater runoff or rain gardens, for example, even if you're in a part of the state they aren't that natural to, is probably could be very beneficial if they'll grow in your climate.
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it as we're adding to the total range of plant communities that could exist here, so I still think it's beneficial. I just don't like prairies being held up as the native plant community, especially here in the northeast part of the state where Maple Beach basswood existed formerly, and that has a fire rotation of something like 400 years. that's not prairie.
I think,
and that's true.
I think we're on the same page.
Yep.
You guys should get together and have a confab, I think. Thanks, Tom.
Well, yeah, I do a lot of stuff with this, and like I say, I am a prairie enthusiast. I just think it's important that people that aren't so well versed in this stuff realize that what they're doing is not what was here before.
Okay.
That they're, you know.
Yep. Got it. Thank you.
Yeah, there's a lot of native ecosystems that we had to the state, and there's an old saying, a place for everything and everything in its place. I think there's opportunity to keep all these systems going.
Yeah. Thanks again, Tom. You can join in, too, by the way. The number 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show as we talk prairies, prairie restoration and management, the science of it, with our guest Rich Henderson of the Department of Natural Resources. Bob in Lancaster has a question. Let's go there. Hi, Bob. Thank you for calling.
Oh, I was calling about 8 years ago. A friend had a prairie flower garden planted professionally. It didn't really have the grasses, but it was mainly meant for the flowers. And since then, all kinds of little saplings have come in, just about every species you can think of. And, you know, and weeds and poison ivy. And I'm wondering, is there some way... You know, you can't burn it because it's in a town. There's houses like real close. I'm just wondering any way to restore that flower garden.
Oh, sure. Yeah, you can do a lot of, you know, basically it's like any other garden. You do weeding. It might be a different type of weeding with the saplings and things where you'd maybe cut the stem and selectively put herbicide in the cut stem. But in general, it'd be hand work. A good thing would also be to, at the end of the year or in the springtime, rake and remove the leaf litter to kind of mimic the effects of fire. That helps a lot, allows the sunlight to come and reach the soil, warm it up, get things going, get this microbial activity stimulated, and give some sunlight to the small plants or maybe seedlings and new prairie plants coming. So there's a lot you can do without fire. Some communities do have a permit system for using fire under the right conditions, so that's not always out of the question, but you can manage these small sites without it as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay. One totally unrelated question.
Sure.
How are the prairie grasses for stabilizing the banks along a creek, you know, that are eroding? Are the roots, can they get in there and they stabilize it or not?
Yeah, it depends on how steep the bank is and how undercut it is. Probably nothing can work there, but the prairie grasses and also the prairie native sedges are some of the best because of their very extensive root systems. Some of them can form some very dense sods in those type of situations, things like cordgrass, blue joint grass, a couple sedges called one's hairy sedge or Carex trichocarpa. That's an excellent bank stabilizer. This really works well. So in those kind of moisture settings with those mat forming grasses, you can get very good stabilization of the sod, definitely.
Alrighty. Well, thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Susan in Cottage Grove. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi. We have a long backyard, and behind our backyard is a farmer's field that alternates between corn and soybeans. And the farmer said that he thought he might plant a row of raspberries as a barrier for between what he sprays on his agricultural crops and what might drift into our backyards. And he said raspberries are resistant to Roundup or something like that. I'm not really sure. Do you have other suggestions? Do you think that's a good idea? We're not sure how to react to that.
Mm.
So you're talking about the farmer is going to plant a row of berries, or he was suggesting you plant them on your side of the fence?
No, actually, he was volunteering to do it, which I thought was very generous of him.
Well, as far as I know, I don't know of any raspberries that are Roundup ready, so to speak, and resistant to Roundup. But in general, foliage like that would just be a physical barrier to any drift. You probably might have to go taller than raspberries, if you got drift that's more than 6 feet high. So it's kind of outside my area of expertise, but it sounds reasonable to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, one of my concerns was that the Japanese beetles seem to love raspberry plants, and I'm wondering if that actually would attract more of them to our backyard and kind of be a mixed blessing.
Well, yeah, they might attract them more to the raspberries.
Yeah.
Keep them away from the other parts.
You're getting a little outside my area of expertise, but as Larry said, they're attracted to the fruit, definitely. But their larvae live in the sod and the grass, so your lawn is probably the good chance it's the source of those beetles. Yeah,
right, that's the harbor, yeah. Okay, well, thanks anyway.
Yeah, thanks, Susan, for calling. Appreciate your call. Yeah, we just did a show, was it yesterday? I'm trying to even remember now. It's in the last couple of days about drift and some of the problems it's causing, herbicide drift, especially to our grape growers here in Wisconsin.
Crops,
yeah, because
yeah,
those are...
It's a concern on a few natural areas as well.
Someone actually called in and said there are some of the native plants are susceptible.
Well, most of them are going to be susceptible, yeah.
Yeah, so it's it can be a big deal. Well, I'm really glad you're going to be talking as part of this whole Wisconsin Science Festival. Gee whiz, I wish I had the information right in front of me, but there are things going on virtually all over the state. Oh, and you've got your book. We have something up on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show, but you look at the
it's growing each year, and it's more statewide. A lot of focus on universities, but we're getting more and more of these away from campus type things and these workshops as well.
Yeah, and this year's book is 82 pages long. And I mean, there's three, four things on virtually every page.
In all subject matters.
On all subject matters, everything from tropical gardens strolls at the Olbrich Bolts Conservatory, which would be wonderful, to early photography with the H.H. Bennett Studio, to treaty days honoring some of the treaties, the Cranes of the World Tour, Science is Fun presentation with Bassam Shakashiri. Oh, gosh, the Science of the Cocktail. I'd kind of like that one to go to. From Wisconsin Institute for Discovery. So, and then yours, of course. And tell us again about yours.
Yeah, the Prairie Enthusiasts are hosting an afternoon this Saturday at their preserve, their barn at one of their big preserves south of Blue Mounds that is going to be giving six different presentations on research that's relates back to the management and restoration of native prairie grass/grassland ecosystems, one on grassland birds, one on badger ecology, one on birds that use shrub thickets within a grassland setting. There's actually endangered Bellsvieria that only lives in that type of habitat.
Mm.
The response, monitoring rare plants on these sites using citizen scientists, citizen-based monitoring on these sites to gather data. There's actually a presentation on restoring organic soil peat wetland that we took the tile out of and now restoring it and monitoring it. It's actually being done for mitigation purposes.
So that's going to be really interesting. Rich, I want to thank you so much for being part of that, but also for coming by today and talking with us about our prairies and also about what's going on at that event. It sounds like a lot of fun.
Yeah, it is. Well, thank you very much.
Appreciate it very much. Rich Henderson, natural resources research scientist with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources. He has over 30 years' experience in natural area inventory, assessment, and management of prairie, sedge meadows, oak savannas, and oak woodlands, and an active volunteer with the Prairie Enthusiasts, one of the great organizations we have here in Wisconsin and elsewhere. So it's great to have him along, and he'll be talking at the Wisconsin Science Festival. Go online to my Facebook. You can learn some more about that festival. Thank you for listening. Garden Talk coming up tomorrow here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.